Welcome, everybody, to Wise Talk. I'm really happy to be here. And I've got Daphne Jones here with us today, who's right now in New York. So welcome, Daphne. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Daphne is an accomplished and seasoned executive with extensive experiences in digital technologies, strategically, entrepreneurially, and globally within multinational corporations. She has over 30 years of experience in general management and executive level roles at IBM, J&J, Hospira, and GE, but began her career as a secretary. We want to hear about that in a minute. At GE, she served as SVP for Future of Work, SVP and CIO for Product Engineering, Imaging, and Ultrasound, and as Senior Executive and CIO for Global Services, all of which compose a $13 billion segment of GE Healthcare. Daphne serves on the board of directors for AMN Healthcare, Barnes Group, and Masonite International Corp. As a recipient of numerous domestic and international awards, she's recently started a company that teaches leaders how to prepare to serve on boards. She's also sought after speaker and author of her new book, Win When They Say You Won't, Break Through Barriers and Keep Leveling Up Your Success. So that sounds wonderful. I can't wait to get into the book, but I want to first welcome you. And I read your bio, which is awesome, but I want you to tell us a little bit about how you went from secretary to executive.
Great. Well, hello everyone. And if you're on or you're watching this as a recording, just want to say hi. Just glad you're here. So my parents were immigrant parents, immigrants from Jamaica. And I was also a preacher's kid, but my mom cleaned bedpans for a living, and that was her job. And my dad was in a factory. So because they came to the US to grab or help their children grab the brass ring. They told me education was everything and everything is education. So they really enforced doing well in school.
Sure.
And so I did so well in school. I skipped first grade. I was having so much fun. And she prepared me for first grade. And she would say, Daphne, in a very small and poor town in Illinois called Phoenix. And we had alleys that were made of gravel. So she said, go out to the alley and bring 2 plus 3 rocks. And Sue, if I didn't bring back 5 rocks, I had to go back and get the switch from the willow tree so she would spank my little legs. So she was like very hardcore education learning to the point where I skipped first grade. And so I love to read Nancy Drew
Oh,
mysteries,
I
hard
love Nancy
to
Drew.
open, right? I mean,
Love it, love it, love it.
couldn't wait to get to the next book. So I just love to read. And so I ended up doing well in school, went to high school. And then as I was getting ready to do my college prep, I was wondering why my high school counselor didn't come to see me. And I found out that it's because he said to me, Daphne, girls like you, black girls, don't go to college. They become secretaries or maybe a teacher. And so I find it was interesting why, a secretary and a teacher, you would think the teacher would know a little bit more, but I didn't argue the point. This man who's paid money to tell me what to do told me what to do, and I did it. And I became a secretary at Woman's Day magazine. And it's funny, and I was the assistant secretary to the assistant editor of the magazine, and all the women, all the people in the middle of the bullpen were women, and all the men had the offices, on the outside. And it was funny to be in a Women's Day magazine. It was run by men, which I thought was, it was the beginning of my understanding that not all things are going to be congruent. There's going to be things that are just don't seem to fit. And that was one of them. So I didn't do really well as a secretary. I made mistakes and I was just, taking dictation wrong. And he called me and he'd yell at me. I'm like, this cannot be what I'm here for. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to be a secretary. I'm going to have a secretary. And that began my desire to be either disobedient, non-compliant, stubborn, competitive, whatever you want to call it, I kind of began then. And so I ended up going to college. I said, the thing that these guys have over me is they've been to college and I haven't. So let me try that. I had no idea what I was going for. I didn't know what an SVP was, had no idea what a board member was. I didn't know any of that. I just knew that I didn't need to be out here. I need to be in there where their offices were. So I went to college, and it was like when somebody tells you that you can't do something, my attitude was, watch me work, watch me. So I ended up getting my undergraduate degree in 3 years instead of 4. And I ended up getting my MBA in 1 year instead of 2. So I skipped 2 years of college, but I skipped that first grade. So here I am, I feel like I
22,
was
23. How old were you at
yeah,
that point?
exactly. I don't know how old I was. I must have been 21 when I graduated college or whatever with an MBA. So then there, that begins the life of looking too young for your job, right? Because, you know, who gets a new job at 21? Usually you're 23 or whatever. So, and I didn't know about SVP. So I just said, I want to work for IBM. So it's like, I took one step at a time and said, IBM, they were on billboards and they were like all over the place in terms of advertising. I'm like, I want to work for that company. So they came and interviewed me. I only got two job offers. So I only went after two things. One was a national bank examiner. The other one was a was an IBM employee. And I took the IBM job. And then as I was an engineer with IBM, then I said, I want to be an engineering manager. How do I do that? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you just kind of level up and then you just level up again and you just keep leveling up. Sometimes life happens. So it's not as if it was a smooth ride up. Sometimes you go down to go up or you go lateral. But over time, I started understanding what it would take to be a winner, to be a leader. And over time, I had ranks from IBM to Johnson & Johnson to Hospira to General Electric, and just following my passion and having the mindset that my mother instilled in me is about having education and having the right mindset in order to win. And that's sort of, you know, skipping a whole lot of things.
Sure,
that's
sure, sure.
How I did it.
And you majored in computer science, so you were in STEM, a STEM?
No, I majored in business, management, well, and marketing.
Okay.
But yeah, I made it into STEM. And when I realized that my counselor's audio in my ear was not matching the video that was playing out in my life, I realized, well, no, it's not impossible for me to do what I want. It's really just inevitable. It just was a matter of time when I was going to become that. But to be in STEM, there was nobody that looked like me, because this was in 1978 or so when I, you know, graduated from college. And so it was very few of us. I shouldn't say none of us, but very, very few. It was a white man's environment. And they say that if you're going to be it, you have to see it. Well, I didn't see it, but I had to be it.
And there were very few women and there were very few Black women I was in.
Yes, exactly right.
So then what would you, I have lots of questions, but like I want to just, based on what you just said in terms of moving from that secretary job, getting your degree, and then moving the ranks, it sounds like it was incremental. It wasn't like you just did it in a flash. It's like you paid your dues, so to speak. Yeah. But what would you say is your, I mean, without getting into the book, just off the cuff, like, what was the number one thing that you did? Like, was it influencing? Was it knowing the right people? Was it preparing more? I mean, what would be that one thing that made it special for you?
Yeah. And I talk about this in the book, is about stakeholders. Now, in my case, it was role modeling. Yep. So, because in stakeholders, there's role models, there's coaches, there's accountability buddies, there's mentors, there's all kind of people that should be in your corner and in your circle. But I didn't have that many. And at IBM, you know, you had to wear a pinstripe suit and, you know, burgundy. Men wore the burgundy wingtips. I even had a pair of wingtip pumps that were burgundy that looked just like the man's. And so I learned, well, in order to win, they dress like that and they get a business deal. This is how they got it. So they say it's okay to be a copycat. Just make sure that the cat you're copying is really good. And so I would just copycat. And then I would finally find somebody who was going somewhere that I would kind of latch onto and ask them questions. So I would say role model behaviors that are winning behaviors. I think that was the top thing for me, because I didn't have a lot of people around me. My mom, dad, nobody knew what to do, how to coach me. It was all learning in the moment with what was around me.
Right, right. And in the book, you talk about looking at ourselves as products. And so I suspect that that was something you probably decided to say after the fact, but you were probably doing that as you were going through this. What does that mean when you say stuff like that?
That's a great question. It is, you know, kind of an interesting concept, because when I look at us as a product, and I'm going to kind of compare us to a product, a product has a market.
Yeah.
Whether you drink Coca-Cola or you drive a Tesla, or you eat gum, whatever. Every product that's out there has a market. We have a market. Whoever is watching you right now, Sue, that's your market. There's somebody who is consuming whatever you're producing, whatever you're delivering. If you're a sales rep, your marketplaces, your customers. It might be your boss, it might be your territory manager, but everybody has a market that's consuming your product. Number two, in as a product, you have competition. Somebody wants to be the next Sue. Somebody wants to take your audience or take your whatever and run with it. Somebody wants to take my place on the board of directors. There's somebody who wants to be the next SVP, especially when you look at the triangle getting narrow at the top. There's somebody who wants that job that you have right there. So just as in competition, Pepsi has Coke, Lowe's has Home Depot, you name it, there's competition. As a product, you have a value. There is something that is that you're worth. And usually that value comes and shows itself by the price that is paid. In our case, the price is our compensation. It's our consulting fees. It's whatever people are willing to pay us because they believe that the value that they're receiving is higher than the price they're paying. And so I believe that if we think like a product and you say, well, is my value lower than my price? If that's the case, you won't have a job very long because they're paying you too much. You'll get you. Then lastly, as a product, you think about an expiration date, like a carton of milk or whatever. If you don't renew yourself and continuously improve yourself, you will be moved off of the top shelf down to the bottom shelf and be replaced with something who has the current value that the market wants. And so continuous improvement is what products do. And so when you're a product, then you think of yourself as a product manager. Oh, so if I'm a product manager, then how do I want to understand my market? What's my net promoter score? Is my market happy with what I deliver, right? You as a product manager, call your own plays. You're not sitting there watching your career go down the field and you're just watching it go. You are on the field calling those plays as a product manager. And so I believe if we think that way, we'll say, how do we improve ourselves from version one? Like the iOS is at version 16 right now. Tesla's at whatever version it is. Products have versions. Well, why can't we have a version? So I'm at version 6.5 of my life. Yeah. Right.
My 6.5
starts with when I went from student to non-student. But when the half comes in where I'm not quite where I want to be yet. So I'm heading to a direction where I'm going to be at version 7, but I'm like 6.5 right now. Okay. And so that's what the product concept is all about. And if you think of leveling up to version 3, version 4, version 4.5, whatever. Think like a product and know that you have a market that needs to be satisfied with you as a product.
So I like that. And I like the idea of brand, and I like the idea of brand being a promise. So we as a product and a promise right. need to show up a certain way and be consistent.
Yeah.
So talk about that. Talk about the importance of consistency in brand and us being a brand.
Yeah, one of the things, and we call it the brand promise, right? You know, and when I was, people would say, what would you tell your younger self, Daphne, if you were 30 or 25 or whatever, or in college, I would talk about the power of pie. And I heard about pie. Harvey Coleman is the author of that book about Organization Games Revealed. And pie says, because my mom said, Daphne, if you do well in your job, they will notice you, they'll promote you, it's going to be just fine. Wrong. Performance is necessary, but it's not sufficient. What is sufficient, I'll get to the brand conversation, is the rest of the letters. P is for performance, I is for your image, and your E is for your exposure. And so your I is your brand. Your I is your image. How do you show up in the market? Mm-hmm. When you come into a room where people know Daphne's coming to this meeting, oh my God, we're going to get so much done because Daphne's amazing. Or if I'm coming into the room and I'm like, you know, I'm always complaining, I'm always the one blaming somebody else, I suck all the oxygen out of the room, mm-hmm. then my brand precedes me. Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be an attitude about me when I get into that room. Mm-hmm. And so you want to have a brand that is not only consistent, but consistently good. Right. Yeah. And so you want to have that brand that people can rely on and say, you know what, when we put Daphne in a tough situation, she maintained her calm, her cool. She was collaborative. She was creative. She was funny. She was empathetic. And so when you have that brand, it can put you in positions that right. you haven't been in before, but they know how you're going to perform because your right. brand is pure. Exposure, but that wasn't your question.
Well, I think that, it's related clearly. I think that it's interesting to me that school allows for content, performance, merit, but there's not a lot of discussion around influence and image and exposure. And even when you get into work situations, they're still not, which is why I exist, obviously, in terms of helping people with that. And yes, that's not the only thing I help people with, but not the only thing you help people with, but it certainly is very important. And I don't want to overdo it in terms of image or influence, because then it might feel too salesy or too salesman womany. But I think that's why I like to use consistency, because you need to be known for something.
Yes.
You know? And being known for something means that you showed up.
Yeah.
So,
and you have a superpower. Part of my brand is I'm a digital technologist. I'm a cybersecurity person. So it's not only how I behave, it's what I also know. And so my brand that precedes me in knowing for something, my super is that. But I also am a business leader who understands M&A and supply chain and manufacturing. So yeah, I think you're totally right. It's the consistency of what you're known for.
So you talk in your book about the five foundational pillars, the five F's. That's part of that's the basis of the winning formula that you discuss in your book. So let's go through those: family, faith, finances, fitness, and furthering career. Okay. Can you go through those and just talk a little bit about them?
Sure. It's just like, think of a house. A house has a foundation that sometimes may be underground and invisible, but if it's not done well, the rest of the house can come tumbling down. Yep. And I speaking from experience, you know, because I was divorced, and because I only focused on furthering my career. So the one F that we all know about and love and appreciate is furthering your career. And then that just basically means going after your job that you want, right? Getting promoted, starting your own company, taking your company public, whatever it is, it's about furthering that business situation. And then right next to that is your finances. And so the finances just says that it's not only about making money, it's how much money you're saving, how much money you're investing. And my brother-in-law, Noel, always says, you never want to live longer than your money. And so you always want to have that money right there so that you cannot be a Walmart greeter or working at Walmart, whatever, at 85 years old. So your finances is right there. Unless you want to, absolutely. Yeah. And some folks just want to stay busy and all that. So that's the finance. So they kind of go together in a way, but they are also different because it's about how you manage your money and how your goal setting around that, based on what stage of life you're in. If you're learning or if you're earning or if you're returning and you want to have more money as you go towards the returning all you can stage. So there's that. But then there's your family after that promotion that's going to go to Japan or Italy or to Iowa. You have to understand, what are my family goals and what is going on with my partner, my spouse, whatever, my children who are in a special school, or my mother who lives with me and needs to go to chemotherapy or whatever. Understanding what your family needs, because you don't want to have all these things happen where you're a public success, but you're a private failure because your family is suffering because you decided to, you know, go take this job. So your family is basically, and it may be your Aunt Grace, who is not really your aunt, but she loves you so much that she is part of your family. It's your friend. So family is kind of all inclusive there. Right. And then there's your fitness. If you don't have your health, and I mean your mental health, your emotional health, and your physical health. If you don't have your health, you don't have a lot. It's hard to work. It's hard to worship when you're sick. And so taking care of yourself in the physical, emotional, mental way is important. And then finally, it's your faith. What do you believe in, right? I had breast cancer a year and a half ago, and I had to believe in something. I had to have my faith grounded in something. And I was in the middle of finishing this book, and I was like, oh, Lord, should I, you know, I'm talking to him, right? And what should I do? And should I put this book down to the side? So having your faith where you know that it's not only you that you depend on, but there's this invisible cane that when you break your leg or you hurt yourself, you can lean on this cane to help you through. And so those are the five F's. And I kind of messed up with my family because I was focusing on my IBM career and I thought marriage took care of itself, but it doesn't. It doesn't.
To work on it for sure. Yeah. So let's talk about fitness for a second, because I know that in the last couple of years, it's been mental health, physical health, been difficult with COVID. Tell us a little bit about what you've seen for yourself and for others as far as what you're noticing about people in your world, either your clients or people that you used to work with, in terms of how they're handling it emotionally and physically.
It's not as great as I wish it were. There's a lot of guilt that I think especially women, and I can't help but not trying to separate the men from the women, but you know, with the COVID situation, with the recession, they say it's also a she session, mm-hmm. right? And in fact, that it has on women's careers, they're in the services business and what have you. So the pandemic has business out of jobs, and those that are working are having to work certainly 80, 100 hours a week, because when they go home, they have to also work. So it's been very difficult for people that I have met. And part of where I then go back into, I do boxing, I meditate, brain tapping. And I'm just recommending to people to find that place of where you can find strength and motivation, but don't suffer in silence. Get the help you need. Get your spouse, get your sister, get somebody, because women, we suffer in silence. We suffer from heart attacks more than I think the other gender does. And because we tend to put ourselves last as opposed to putting our oxygen mask on ourselves first, yeah. And then helping other people. But it hasn't been pretty. It's been tough, and people have left the workforce voluntarily or involuntarily because of the issues with stress and mm-hmm. what I'll say guilt of not being at home when the child is getting schooled at home, not being at the office when other people are able to be at the office. It's just been a whole variety of challenges that people find. Yeah. And it's about how do you look at the problem differently? And that's the only suggestion that I'd like to focus on is your mindset. If you look at the things a certain way, then you'll act a certain way and then you'll get those results. But if you don't like change how you think, and that's what I try to get people to change how they think so they can change what they do to get through the situation.
And you've spoken the next transition very well, because I want to talk about your 4-step process for change. You call it edit, envision, design, iterate, transform. Could you speak to that and some examples? And then I'm going to open it up to if Susan Wayne, who's along with us, wants to ask any questions.
Oh, sure. Sure. Okay. So as I mentioned, you think about a product, and a product has to continuously improve. So I grew up in the technology business with IBM, and all my jobs have all been in IT, information technology. Mm-hmm. And so when you do things as relates to applications, you know, you're the dating app or the restaurant app or the Waze app for driving, Lyft, Uber, whatever it is, all of those apps have gone through a way of being updated and maintained and leveled up. So I've taken that what we call a software development lifecycle concept, and I now apply it to ourselves as human beings. So how can we take our software, our product, and modify it and upgrade it? And so edit, basically, first of all, it means change, because edit is sure. what you do. It's a verb and it's also a noun. So for me, edit says, if I change my mindset to have a growth mindset, not a fixed mindset, okay. If I suspend this belief, how do I edit? Edit means change my mind. I'll change my expectations. I'll change my behavior. I'll change my outcomes. But that's that. Edit stands for envision, design, iterate, and transform. And so when you edit, when you start with the envision, it's basically saying, reimagine yourself. You know, right now you don't know how to swim. You want to learn how to swim. So you really imagine yourself learning how to swim. If you want to be a better speaker, reimagine yourself being a better speaker. So envision says set a audacious goal and figure out and understand what your passions are, understand what your vision is, what your purpose is. And then when you do that, you then have some boldness and some confidence that you can go forward now and actually get your vision done. So the first digit or letter is E for envision. Your 5 F's are part of that. You can't create your vision for yourself without thinking about your family, without thinking about what makes you healthy and whole, right? So all those things that we just talked about the 5 F's are in there. Your design is the next letter. It's what allows you to prepare to have set your vision to. And so you look at what are your strengths and your weaknesses? So you do a SWOT analysis. What's funny about Edit is all the tools that are in Edit are what we use in the business community already.
Sure.
Right. We use SWOT analysis already. We use OKRs, objectives and key results, right? We use plans of action. We look at Johari's window to say, what are my weak spots, right? And so instead of doing that only for the company that you work for, let's do it for ourselves. And so when you look at design, you are creating a risk-adjusted project plan or plan of action. And you've prioritized your projects into not trying to do 50 things at once, which is one of the issues that I think we have, is we try to do too many things. You prioritize them down into what I call two bodacious objectives and a few other objectives there. And so that's your design. Then after you design it, then you're ready to experience it. People are now ready to experience you. You're ready to go jump in the pool and learn how to swim. You're ready to go pick up that mic and learn how to be a better speaker or an SVP or what have you. So when you do that, you put yourself out there and then you get feedback. You know, you try something and somebody says, Daphne, that was horrible. And you don't take that feedback personally, you take it strategically. You don't, when a company loses market share or their net promoter score, you know, is 20 and it should be 55 or something, they don't cry. Well, they might cry, but they don't quit and say, we're going to give up this type of business. They find a way to look at the patterns and say, what could I do differently next time? What must be true in order for me to do a better job? Mm-hmm. And I teach you in the book how to take feedback, because not all feedback is great. But how do you assess, you know, I say, you know, take in the meat and spit out the bones. How do you know what the bones are and how you know what's meat that you should consume? And so once you do that, you pivot, you persevere, but you never quit. You find a way to win. That's iterate. Then you go back and forth from iterate to design, iterate to design. Then when you've come out of iterate, you are now transformed. You didn't know how to swim. Now you're a halfway swimmer or you're a full swimmer or you didn't know how to speak really well. Now you can do that. And so you have transformed into something that you envisioned back in the beginning. And maybe you only halfway did it, but you know, you used to wear a size 8 shoe. Now you're 8.5. So you're wearing a bigger shoe because you've become bigger. And so as you transform, though, you don't only transform yourself, you transform people around you, because now your mindset is different. And now you're going to help their mindset be different. And then when you're at the end of transform or part of transform is you say, well, what should I do next? What's my next vision going to be? And then I help you go through that back into what's your next vision. So you start out, I want to learn how to swim. Oh, now I know how to swim. What should I learn to do next? I want to be a lifeguard. All right. So you level up your swimming ability to become a lifeguard. Then you go through that. And then after you're done with that, you say, I want to be a scuba diver. And then you go through that. And so there's always another way for you to level up in your life and in your career.
Nice. I have a lot more questions, but I want to give us a little take a breath and ask if Susan wants to jump in. She's on this call. Do you want to jump in, Susan, and ask any questions or offer anything?
Hi. Sure. Hi, Daphne.
Hi, Susan.
First of all, your story is so inspiring. I'm sure you hear that all the time. So I just want to thank you for the role modeling I know you're doing to many, many people and the ripple effect I'm sure it's having. I love your candor about IBM and how you just decided, who am I going to copycat? I'd love your how you think about copycatting versus finding the leadership traits that there's a difference between what people can do for success themselves, material success, promotion success, and finding that way that's authentic for you as a leader. And how do you advise people to choose who to role model after?
Yeah, great question. First of all, as I talk about it in the book, you have to understand, why are you here? And what are you good at? What's your superpower? And, you know, my vision and mission is to teach wisdom to the world. I'm a teacher by nature. I'm just naturally an instructor, except my husband says, Daphne, I'm not one of your students. So I can't teach my husband anything. Everybody else, it kind of works out okay. So I believe that your purpose is at the intersection between your passion, what you love to do, and what you're good at. So when those two come together, that is where I believe that you got to find yourself, right? And so if you're not doing that, then the question is, what can I do? How can I change that? You know, should I, you know, because I say to my son, you do what you have to do until you can do what you want to do. Not everybody can follow their purpose at this particular moment. So, but if you understand what you love and what you aspire to be, an easy thing to do, and I tell people that this would, when they're trying to get on a board, find somebody who has your skill set. Find somebody who has your interests. And if you were to type in your on LinkedIn those headlines, what do you call those keywords? Yeah. Take those keywords and type in what represents you. Put that into LinkedIn, and you'll be surprised at who you come up with. And so now these people are, if finance is your passion, or M&A or human capital management is your passion, put that in and you're going to find a litany of people that are already doing what you want to do or are doing what you are doing. And you'll find that some are doing them very well. Some are at the highest levels of their corporations and others are at different levels. And then you find a way to connect with them. And next thing you know, you now have a relationship with them if that's what you want, or you can just follow them from afar. You know, look at them on Instagram, look at them on Twitter. What are they tweeting? What are they reading? And then you do that. So you first have to know who you are, what you want to be, and what is opposed to what you're doing. What is it that you want to become if you're not doing what you want to be already? And then you find people, and that's just one way. I'm on a group called T200, and the T200 group is a bunch of senior technical women who come together, women supporting women, and we talk to each other and we help each other find new jobs. You know, there's a CIO job available and there's a board position over here. And then you find those organizations, if it's not LinkedIn, which can be impersonal, you find organizations that represent who you are as well, birds of a feather that tend to flock together. So there's myriad ways of knowing who to copycat, but know who you are. And in my book, I talk about, it's a ship model that created, are you strategic? Are you hands-on? Are you a people person? No, I is influential and P is personal relationship. And so if that's who you are, if you're strategic, then find those people who are very strategic. Mm-hmm. And that's how I do it.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I feel the teacher in you. It's coming. I was actually thinking, oh, you should be out. I'm thinking of all my nieces and nephews in their 20s. And I was like, I wish they could. I'm going to send this recording to them, hear from you. Great. So I'm sure you're awesome at influencing young and up and coming, especially.
Well, I think it's like knowing your audience. When I teach people how to get ready for board service, I say, look at the interview from two vantage points, not only your vantage point to the person, but their vantage point to you. What's on their mind? What do they worry about? And so I try to take a look at, if I'm talking to 13-year-olds or, you know, 30-year-old or 80-year-old, whatever, what are they worried about? And, you know, what are they trying to accomplish? And so I hope I hit the mark, but you never know. But thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Susan. So I want to pick up on that because I really like your energy. I mean, you probably came out of the womb energetic. So I think you probably came out of the womb energetic. So you're very energetic, and I suspect you've been that your whole life. And I am as well. And so when I'm trying to coach folks who aren't so much, they're more introverted, perhaps, or mm-hmm. they're just different from us. Let's just put it that way. And I'm not trying to put you and I in the same category, but I'm just trying to say, like, trying to like just oppose people who are introverted versus people who are more extrovert. How do you help, or what do you suggest to people who are less extroverted than you, who don't necessarily show their passion the same way you do, in terms of how they can influence? Okay, this is with anybody, and I'm gonna go into more specifically around affinity groups and things like that. But I wanna talk just generally, like, how do you help somebody, support somebody who's more introverted?
I don't know if influence only comes from extroverted people. So I think the premise, I don't know if I would agree with that. That because I'm extroverted, because people like shut up. You know, and that's not influential, right? And if you're always talking, and I actually have a thing that I do called wait, why am I talking? But anyway, so for that, but I think what I try to do for individuals who are, because the other side of not talking too much is you don't talk at all.
Well, that's really what I'm getting to. Yeah, if you're in a meeting,
yeah. I mean, it may be hard to do, but I suggest, and I've had this conversation with people in my roles at GE, because I'd be in a meeting with some other executives and other leaders, and it'll be a full meeting. And then somebody come to me and say, Daphne, why is that person over here? Why are they here? They didn't say a word the whole time. And you don't want to be that person that is just taking up space in a room. And so I would tell people that are more introverted that there should be at least three things that they do in about every 90 minutes or so, depending on how long the meeting. If it's an all-day meeting, it's one thing. If it's an hour meeting, it's another thing. Three things that they should do. The first thing that they should do is make an observation. So someone is presenting something, and the introvert person, and I tell them to write it down, because if you write down your question, it will come out. You'll have had a chance to like cross it out and write it again, and it'll come out mm-hmm. more polished. Mm-hmm. Nobody cares if you're reading your question. They just care that the delivery is good. And so the first thing I would say is make an observation. You know, it looks like sales went down 2 quarters in a row, but then went back up 5 quarters. You know, right. So whatever the observation is.
Whatever it is. It doesn't really matter, actually. Whatever it is.
Number two, the second thing you do probably half an hour later is you ask a question. So why do you think that this is the case? And where did it go? And who said whatever? Did you try that? That's the second thing. And then in another half an hour or so, you then make a recommendation. Or maybe you ask two questions, one every 30 minutes. But the point is you make an observation. I'm alive. Hello, I'm awake. The second thing is you make ask a question or two. And then the third thing, you make a recommendation. So you leave with being able to say, I added value to that conversation.
Right.
And I didn't have to talk all day.
Yeah, I love that. And I use a similar process with people in terms of just, you know, pipe up somehow, like the beginning of the conversation, and show you're there. And I always will suggest to people, whether they're talk too much or not enough, is asking questions going to be your friend no matter what.
If you talk too much,
asking a question gets you in more of an inquiry mode. And if you don't talk enough, it gets you also in more. So I'm with you on that. Do you think that it's harder to do that on Zoom? Because most of us are in Zoom calls trying to do that.
That's true. It is really hard for an introvert to do that. It will be harder for an introvert to do that. Now, part of my hashtag is find a way to win. And difficulty is no excuse for not trying. And I say, if you're not sick and tired of being sick and tired, then wait until you are, because you have to want it. You have to want to win. And I'm telling, trust me and believe, and I talk about copycat, and I think Susan asked that question. Well, who's doing well? And who is an introvert like me who happens to be a senior vice president? There are people who are SVPs that are not extroverts.
Right.
So again, back to copycatting, how do I follow the lead of that person over there?
Yeah.
Because you don't have to go it alone. You know, you're not here by yourself, and the people around you are not only there for themselves, they are there to also help you to win. And that's how we got to look at that we're not alone.
So same question, but now apply to what we can choose to start with women. Do you think that your process is applied to everyone? I would assume so. And is there specifically things women should do differently or more of or less of or whatever? Do you just delineate that at all or not?
I only have one male in there and the stories, and the rest are women. The reason why I created my company, The Board Curators, is because white men that are CEOs and CFOs tend to be the ones that get on boards. And so when somebody, and my mission is to teach wisdom to the world, and the way I do that is through my company and through my book and through my board work, right? So on the board work, people have been undervalued, underappreciated, overlooked because they're Black, they're brown, they're in marketing, they're in law, they're IT, whatever that is. And so I use the book and I talk about women's roles a little bit more, women experiences a little bit more. But everybody wants to win. But I want to give a leg up to the women who typically don't, who are overlooked and undervalued. Like I was told countless times and shown countless times that I'm not worth it. But the book is for everyone. Everybody can envision a goal. They can, and I believe if you don't leap, you'll never reach. So you can envision a stretch goal, make it a big goal, audacious goal. Everybody can do that. Everybody can design a plan of action that takes into account headwinds and tailwinds and all. So I think it could be for everybody. But I wanted women to know that they can do it, because me as a Black girl from Jamaica, who was told all kinds of things, beat up when I was 8 years old by a gang of white boys, you name it. If I can do it, you can do it.
Yeah.
So that's why it's for everybody.
Yeah. I hear that. Were you an athlete at all when you were younger?
Believe it or not, I wasn't. I should have been a runner. My husband says this day that I have, I'm very strong at my legs. And but I wasn't. I was a lassie and a pom-pom girl. So
okay. All right. That's the spirit you have about winning. I think that mine comes, well, I know that it comes from being an athlete and being competitive and wanting to. So for me, it's not so much about winning. It's just getting to the best thing. So if I, win a contract, then it's like, it's good for everybody. So that's how I look at it. But I am super competitive.
And, yeah, me too.
So and again, the same question is would you tell somebody who is Black or Brown a different story at all? I mean, I say no. I think that what you've told, the things you outlined in terms of how to influence applies to everybody. And it's just a matter of practicing it and then having the courage to be on a Zoom and having to make the observation, to ask a question, to make a recommendation. And so maybe it's a little bit harder for introverts, or maybe it's a little harder for people of color. I mean, I don't know. I want to know what you think about that.
Yeah, it is more difficult. I mean, it's the question about assimilate or authenticate.
Sure.
Because, not having a role model, being the only white, only Black person on a board, being the only woman on a board, who am I looking to? Turkeys know how to train other turkeys. Tigers train tigers. Who trains a Black person? Right. Another human being, not another Black person in some cases. And so there's no role model. So that's a problem. So then you have to then figure out the game. It takes longer. Because when you have a sponsor, or especially a mentor or a coach, they're telling you these are the rules of the game, right? What time does the 8 o'clock? I mean, my first board meeting, Sue, the 8 o'clock board meeting, I thought started at 8 o'clock. So I got there at 10 to 8, knew I was doing something. People were there from 6:45. I didn't know that the 8 o'clock board meeting started at 6:45. And so because people were having breakfast and putting their stuff down and whatever, solving
schmoozing.
World problems.
They're schmoozing.
Right?
Yeah. They're schmoozing. That's
exactly. And I didn't know that. So who do I learn from? And so it takes you longer to figure that out. I missed the first schmoozing episode because I was late, but it didn't happen again. And then now it happens all the time. So sometimes we're late to the game because we don't have a buddy or
sure.
To do that. So how do you learn? So they got to learn the game. And that's why PI is so important. Perform well, be a great board member, whatever board members are measured against, whatever senior vice presidents are measured against, whatever analysts are measured against, perform well. Understand what the image is of a winner. What does a winner act like, talk like, smell like, read? What do they read? Where do they go for vacation? Understand that. And then who do you know? The E is really important in PI because it's not only about, who you know, but who knows you? Who will speak up for you in a room that you're not in or on Zoom that you're not on, right? And so having that, it helps you be able to say, okay, I know how to play the game now. But it is not easy for women. And women of color, especially, again, not having a role model, do we assimilate? Well, I wore a pinstripe suit and I still got downsized from IBM, right? Because there was something wrong I didn't do in the right way. So do we assimilate? Yeah, you can try, but you're still not going to get the same treatment unless you perform really well,
right?
Unless your image is outstanding, unless your exposure is supreme in terms of powerful, powerful people. Mm-hmm. Or then should you authenticate? Should I be my very self? Should I go to the Martin Luther King? Should I take Martin Luther King Day off? So I had to figure that out. I had to decide, Yeah. No, I can't take it off. They'll think I'm a rebel. They'll think I'm trying to be all about Black power. They'll think I'm, you know what I mean? And so I couldn't be totally authentic, and I didn't want to totally assimilate. And you're, and there's the intersectionality of being a woman who's also Black as well. So it's not the easiest thing. And that's why I'm here. That's why this book is here.
Well, and I'm so happy you wrote it. And I'm so happy that you are willing to talk about it. I think this is a hard thing. And I think what we're up against is, in some cases, whether women, men, people of color, is that some people just think merit should win the day. And
that
merit should win the day.
Oh, yeah.
And that the image and the exposure isn't as important. And when I work with people, everyone we're working with are like smart, you know, and their performance is going to be, you know, there's a billion people that are going to perform like you. So what's going to be the difference?
That's right.
You know, what's going to be
When you're young in your career, let's be clear. When you're 23 years old, your performance is everything.
Sure.
It's 95%. So this is not to say that it's not important. As you get older, your performance is assumed.
It's assumed.
I didn't become a vice president because I was lousy at my job. So being a performance person is important because you got to establish your reputation as being somebody who delivers, who's on time, who delivers early, under budget, all that stuff. But as you get to be my age or younger or whatever, performance is just a given. Now, how do you differentiate yourself? What's your competitive advantage
right. That
you have? And it's who you know. I'm telling you, people get not tapped on the shoulder, not because of only how they perform. It's because somebody that's really important, who's a sponsor, risk their positional and political capital so right. That you could get that job in Italy to stand up that new distribution center.
Right.
Yeah. So I think it's a differentiator.
Yeah. Relationship with us. Well, I'm loving this conversation. Keep going, but we don't have more time. So
is there anything else? Went by fast.
I know. Is there anything else you want to say in terms of anything that people should know? I'm gonna tell everybody about your book and stuff, but is there any other pearls of wisdom?
I would say, one, play the long game.
Yeah.
Play the long game. Don't get disappointed by something that just happened, you know, yesterday or that's going to happen tomorrow. Look at the trajectory of where you're trying to go, and don't let one mishap or one victory think that you've sealed it. Play the long game. I think number two, it's know your stakeholders. You will not get anywhere unless you have whether it's role models that you're following or sponsors, mentors, you've got to take them in and use them as much as you can. And I think lastly, it would be take any feedback that you get, take it strategically and not personally. Because if you take it strategically, you'll use it as information and data, and you'll be data driven as opposed to emotional and revenge driven or whatever. So those are things I would say.
I love that summary. Thank you. Thanks so much for being with us. I really know that people will love hearing you and when they hear the tape. So people can get a hold of everyone on the call. You can get a hold of Daphne through Daphne E. Jones. So make sure you get the E in there. N-E is your first name. And then E is the middle initial, jones.com. That's the same for LinkedIn. And then the book is Win When They Say You Won't. Break through barriers and keep leveling up your success.
Yeah,
and thanks, everybody. Happy holidays. We won't see you again until January.